Welcome to Paint Ed. PCA provides painting contractors with connections they need to grow their business. To find out more and to become a member, visit pcapainted.org. Find more great content like this on PCA Overdrive. A subscription to the platform is included with membership. For all of you non-members out there, sign up for a free trial. PCA Overdrive is available on the App Store and Google Play. This episode is brought to you by Bear and Federated Insurance.
I see you over there bouncing your head. Welcome to Women in Paint. I'm Michael Chaney, the owner of No Drip Painting, where we are changing lives through paint. I got my guy on with me, Aaron. He's the founder of Sunlight House Painting. He's right here in Columbus, Ohio with me. Aaron, thank you so much for taking the time to join me. I can see you're busy. You're in the vehicle. You're out crushing it. You're doing your thing. So thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I am in the mobile command unit, as they say.
That's right.
It's a busy, busy week after a big home and garden show and then being gone for a week at PCA, so we can't run any of the appointments. So needless to say, this week is pretty full.
It's busy, busy.
And that's a great thing. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, awesome. Listen, let's go ahead and just jump right into, you talked about PCA. We were just at the expo. And before we hit the live button, you were really kind of, I love the way that you framed this and your takeaway from the expo and what PCA means and how if other people, in the world could see what's happening at these events, the painting industry could really be elevated. Can you kind of just share what we were talking about before we hit record?
Yeah. So, I think painters get a bad rap. I think we're, notoriously our reputation was we're just drunks, right? And then as the scene has evolved, we're pill heads. All we do is smoke weed. We get high, whatever. And I feel like if people outside our industry could come to PCA and see over 1,000 painting contractors in one place that really not only care about their business, but care about how can we help clients? How can we give them a better experience? How can we be better? I think they would look at us in a different light, like the roofers, like the electricians. We're a skilled trade, and the expo really kind of like reinforces, like, not only are we a skilled trade, we really do care about being better, And I think it's a really positive thing I took away from the expo.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. It's so invigorating seeing everyone together and feeling the passion and hearing the stories. It was really amazing. It was my first expo, and I'm so glad that I got to participate. Let's talk about your journey to where you are now. One thing that I've heard you talk about is, painters don't get a lot of credit. You didn't grow up saying, I want to be a painter. You were actually kind of at times ashamed of that. Talk about your beginnings and how getting into this line of work wasn't always something you were thrilled about.
Yeah, so I actually kind of cut my teeth in retail. It was a really awesome winter job. Started as holiday help. Basically, you kind of work from like early November until a week or two into January. And it's like just, this is back when, for those of you who don't remember what a mall was, there was no Amazon, there was barely any online shopping. So the mall was king, retail was king, and it was unlimited hours pretty much. So they hired, a lot of college kids that had a lot of energy and that were positive and could, relate to clients and customers, and also could work very late into the night fixing the store to get it back to what it looked like before we opened. So I was able to kind of get into that industry. I had an amazing boss, and I tell her this every time I see her. She was probably one of the best leaders I've worked for. And she was super direct. There was no black and white with her. She told you exactly what she wanted, but if you delivered, she really rewarded those who worked hard. And it was a great experience. So I'm working retail, and the guy comes in, he's shopping with his wife. His wife was friends with one of our assistant managers. they saw me working. I was working Delimited. So it's a women's clothing store. So there's my, you know, there's my connection to women in paint, right? And I worked in the back, you know, kind of the receiving, shipping, receiving, and then security tags, you know, folding clothes, bringing new clothes out, stocking the denim wall. So I'm over on the denim wall, and he's like, just kind of starts chatting me up, and he's like, "You like working here? Like working with all these women?" I'm like, "Yeah, it's not bad. You know, I like the hours. I like my coworkers. It's a fun environment," which it was. We would like when we would close. You know, you put that gate down in the front of the store. We turn off the music that you have to play, and we start. We jammed a lot of U2 because my store manager was a huge U2 fan. I think she's seen him in concert over like 50 times. So we jam a lot of U2, and we just have a lot of fun. And I'm like, "Yeah, so I like working here." It's like, "Well, I'm always looking for hardworking guys like yourself, young, energetic. You know, here's my card if you ever would consider painting houses." I'm like, "Oh, okay." I took his card, like, okay. You know, in my mind, I'm like, well, at this time I was in college, you know, it's like, oh, I'm in college, you know, like,
right.
I'm not a painter.
Not gonna be a painter.
I'm gonna be some amazing college graduate, you know, yeah. Do some amazing things. So but I took his card, you know, like, you know, put it in my wallet. And what happens in retail is once you get into February, they really back then scaled back the hours, like the budget changed completely. So you're going from like as much as you want to work to maybe 20 hours because, you know, holiday season is over. Yeah. So my hours got cut back. I mean, at the time I was in school, so it wasn't a big deal. But then I'm thinking like if it's going to be these kind of hours going into the summer, you know, that's not going to be good. So I reached out to him. And for those of you that don't know my story, it was Tom Hodgson with Color World House Painting. And I'm like, "Hey, if you're still looking to hire, I'm interested in, you know, this, you know, whatever this position might be." And he's like, yeah, we haven't even started. So back in those days, before they were a year-round company, they were just a summer exterior only, almost like a local version of a college pro.
Okay.
Basically targeted Ohio State students only. Then Ohio State was on quarters. So we didn't get out of school until, I want to say like the first or second week of June.
Right.
But we didn't go back until like mid-September. It was kind of weird. So it was good for like that kind of seasonal workforce because it would help. You had enough students to get you through that August push before they went back to school. So they really didn't even start painting houses until almost May. So he had a couple of full-time people that, you know, were already kind of working there. And then the college guys just kind of like all came in like an army. And he went from like maybe like one or two crews to like eight, like overnight.
Yeah.
So he's like, "Here's an address. We're kind of doing some training on this house." So I was like, I always remember the date because it was his son was born that day. So it was April 20th. We're over there painting. And he's like, "I got a roll. You know, my son's on his way," you know. So April 20th, 99, that was my first time actually painting for a paycheck. So, you know, we're painting this house. It was great. And I kind of stuck through it, you know, like with the couple of guys I was training with. And then once the college crew actually like came into play, we actually painted the owner's first house. And he basically took all these guys and just everybody got one side of the house. So, you know, front, right, back, left. And I think I was on the right side. I can't remember, but you know, just to see who was like, you just show up. We got a ton of paint, a ton of brushes, wear clothes you can get paint on, and we'll see what you can do. Right.
Yeah.
So by that time I had kind of been painting a little bit here and there. So I had an idea of what to do, but you know, instantly I fell in love with the trade because it was so awesome to like come to this house that might not look pretty or might be an ugly color or peeling paint. And then when you're done, the customer's so happy, they love it. We are like, "Wow, we, you know, look at what we did. We did this."
Yeah.
You know, there's such a great before and after. And it's a change of scenery. Like you're not going to the same desk, the same office, the same whatever every single day. So different houses, different owners, different colors. So like for me, I have mad ADD. So like it just kind of scratches that itch where it's like constant change.
Yes.
So I already liked it. But the funny thing about the training day was we had a few people that went to lunch and then didn't come back. So it's like kind of one of those, like, we're going to see who can make it through the day and that'll help us figure out who can do it. But during those first few years, it was mainly college guys and it was mainly seasonal. And we had a lot of good times. You know, we had cookouts at the owner's house. We do pool parties. You know, he would come deliver checks. You know, direct deposit was kind of a thing then, but he would deliver paychecks on Friday. He'd bring Gatorades, and it was really like a family environment. It was fun. So that's kind of how I got started in painting.
That's awesome. So jumped right in with the brush in your hand, fell in love with painting and what you can actually do with it. And that is the exact same with me. I mean, I love the idea of being able to create something, right? And right. When I started painting, and you see where you start and then the end project, that is also something that just has always struck me as you know, just something, there's just something so magical about that. So you jump right in, you're paying the summers, you get through college. And then how do you go from that? And how do you shake this idea that painting isn't a real skill? Because at some point you must have changed your outlook on that, because you ended up becoming a business owner. So how'd you go from, you know, painting the summers to, okay, now I'm actually going to start my own business?
Yeah. So the year of 2000 into 2001, would have been, I guess, my third year of college. And at that point I just realized like it wasn't for me. It's not that I didn't enjoy it, but like, unless someone has a, pardon the expression, gun to my head, I don't study. I didn't want to do homework. I didn't want to come, you know, I showed up to class for the midterm, you know, like,
right. Someone, right.
You know, and there were a few classes that if I was interested, I really like, I was into them. I would go to the, you know, the professor's hours and I would make sure I was involved, but if I had no interest, I didn't show up. So
what were you studying? What was your degree?
I wanted to go into business, and then I realized there's no way in hell I could get into the Fisher College of Business. So I changed my major to human ecology.
Okay.
Like, and within that, like, human ecology school, there's kind of a business path, but it's not business. I don't know
how to
explain it. So
I got you.
My guidance counselor kind of helped me get there, but I don't know. I just knew kind of it wasn't really what I wanted. So I actually went back to Tom and I said, hey, I don't know what your plans are for, you know, me or whatever kind of going forward, but I don't think I'm going back to school. So this has been like going into that fall quarter. So fall of 01, maybe if this works out, I can do something full time. So he said, yeah, absolutely. So if you're looking to do this, yeah, we can definitely use you, you know, full time. So at the time, the person who was kind of number two in command, he was just kind of, you know, for lack of a better term, kind of like slacking. I don't know if slacking was the word, but just not really pulling his weight. So it kind of was like, I was kind of like right place, right time. He stepped away and I kind of filled that spot and kind of learned the other complete other side of the business. So estimating, you know, sales training, how to kind of bond rapport with customers. And that was where I really was like, man, this is fantastic, you know, because I never really understood how commission worked, you know, and I'm someone who always, I mean, I enjoy hard work, but like when like commission says, like, there's no ceiling, like there's no cap, like it's whatever you sell, you
right.
know, you get a piece of that, like that motivated me like fire. Like I was so excited to, so that's kind of where I got into like, if there's an estimate, I'll go do it. Because at the time, you know, I wasn't, my base salary wasn't very big, but the commission was, you know, limitless. Right. So that's where I got excited about, you know, sales and commission. So
and
that was kind of how I did it.
I'm going to guess that that's still your favorite part of this now, right? You love interacting with the customers.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
If I could script a perfect movie, I would only do estimates and nothing else. And somebody else would be like the controller or whatever you call that. But
right. Right.
That's for later.
I love it. Okay. So you kind of get your feet wet with estimating and probably some project management. You're getting kind of set in the industry. Talk about how you take the leap to business owner. For most people, we know this. That's a difficult decision to make. You go from having a job to taking the leap to being a business owner. It's not easy. We know all the blood, sweat, and tears that comes with being a business owner. How did you make the decision and the leap?
It wasn't an easy decision. You know, at the time my son was, I don't know, about a year old, 6 months old. I can't remember the exact timing. But for me, it was like, I realized there's kind of this, not a cap, but like I like only so much that I could make. And it's like I was working a lot, you know, and I wanted to be more present and spend more time with than my newborn son. So it's like I need to figure out a way to maybe leave and do something different. So at the time, then I went and worked for PPG Paints as a sales rep. So interviewed there and was hired, and I was kind of like a res repaint, called on some res repaint clients, and then also some industrial clients, and then also some new construction, because, you know, 07 was when I was there. It was still kind of good. We hadn't had that downturn yet. And, you know, a lot of the builders at the time used PPG or Porter paints. We couldn't make enough. We couldn't make it fast enough. Like MI Homes, Dominion Homes, all those bigger, like, cookie cutter builders were buying so much paint from us. So some of my accounts were a part of that as well.
Right. So you got to see the other side of it.
Yep.
So you end up with your business. And I know that there's kind of other factors in there that took place.
Right.
But let's talk about, so starting the business.
Yeah.
The pain points. If you can think back to your first couple of years, now I know you've been doing this for a while now.
Yeah.
The first couple of years of just getting started. I'm meeting a lot of people that watch this podcast that are just getting started. What advice would you have? Even if you could go back and tell yourself, hey, I'm just starting this business. Here are some things you've got to do, some things that I learned the hard way.
Well, I think number one is get a real bookkeeper.
Mm.
And because unless you're like really good at that stuff, I was not. I basically used, and I'm embarrassed to say this, H&R Block for the first several years, and it worked, but it worked enough, but it didn't work.
Yeah.
Get a real bookkeeper and get a real CPA.
Let me ask you a question real quick.
Yes.
I remember the time when I was faced with, I want a bookkeeper, but I feel like I can't afford it. Talk to me about that place when you're at that place.
It is. It's tough because I was there too. What you don't know, or what I didn't know, is so once I did find a real bookkeeper, CPA, you can pay them a small monthly payment, which goes towards everything. So you're not giving them one big chunk when it comes time to do your taxes. And as you're smaller, you really don't need a lot of tax planning or tax strategy. So you just need someone to help you make sure that what you're paying is as low as you can possibly pay legally. And they sign off on that return, because I always thought I can never afford them. They're going to charge me like $1,200 for this return, which is true, right? But $50 every 2 weeks is not that much if you have some extra money.
Yes.
So that's number one. And then having an accurate bookkeeper just really helps. So you're not having to spend time at night or on the weekends or whenever you have that. Cause when you're starting out, you don't have a lot of extra time, especially if you're in the field or on the brush, keeping track of all your Sherwin-Williams receipts, all your,
yes.
And especially now there's so much technology where you can have your receipts automatically dump into HubDoc, which then connects to your QuickBooks. Like there's so many things now that, you know, when I started, probably were just barely, everyone was on QuickBooks desktop,
yes,
for the most part. So there's a lot of things that are changing. So
so you know, bookkeeper for sure, bookkeeper for sure,
and accountant number one,
an accountant.
Yes.
The other thing I'm going to add there, and this is all in retrospect, of course, but the sooner you can learn about what your numbers mean,
yes,
the better. And what I mean by that, I used to be so intimidated by a P&L and all the things, all the reports.
Yep.
Like, I think that's one reason why I was hesitant to get a bookkeeper, because you literally have to open up all of your things and say, here's what I've been doing. There's such a vulnerability piece to that. And I think sometimes the you know, disclosing what you've been doing is hard. And then of course the financial piece, but I'm with you. Getting your numbers organized early on could be a lifesaver. So bookkeeper, keep going.
Yes. Well, the thing too is like you're embarrassed
Yes.
Because you're like, you know, you should know this, or you, but the bookkeepers are only asking those questions just for clarification. They're used That's to right. getting people to come to them. It's like a doctor, right? A doctor doesn't, like, you're not going to the doctor because you're sick or because you're well. Like, you're going because you need to go, right? And then they can tell you, are you sick or this is what you're, like, they're not, doctors are used to seeing patients for odd things or weird things. You're embarrassed medically, you know, medicine can be a humbling thing, right? Bookkeepers are the same way. They're used to seeing people come in with messy books, no books, you know? So it's like, it's, there should be no shame in it. But if you don't know, like for me, it's like, oh, I've paid Sherwin-Williams, I've paid my guys, and there's money in the account. That must mean that's all my money.
Right.
But it might not be. That could be deposits. That could be anything. And if you spend that money thinking you have it, you could get yourself into a major cash flow situation. So
that's right.
The faster you can do that, because I preach that. I probably didn't have accurate books for the first maybe 8 years, 9 years. I mean, like, they were somewhat. I mean, I didn't have no book, you know, zero books, but I was a train wreck for a while.
Yeah, I'm with you. So get a good bookkeeper, a good CPA. And then what else advice would you give to someone just getting started?
So this is a hard one because now the culture has shifted and like people want family life balance. People want time away from their job. It's I think for the first 2-3 years, you're going to have to make some sacrifices. Doesn't mean you have to work 24 hours a day and abandon your entire life and abandon your family, but understand that you're making sacrifices now. So then when you do kind of get it off the ground, then you can step away. Oftentimes people look at, if they came from another company or they see other business owners who are doing things, they should be like, I should be able to take that trip. Yeah. I should be able to, you know, take afternoons off and play golf or whatever. But the reality is maybe you're not in that phase of your business where you can. So be willing to do the hard things now and skip and miss some things to, you know, reap that benefit, you know, later.
Yeah, that's a great point. So you get started. Hopefully you've got your bookkeeper lined up. You're understanding you're going to make sacrifices. When do you get to the point in your business that you do maybe get to go play golf in the afternoon? Or
when you have somebody that's in the field that can run things. So you're like, you're not getting those phone calls. You're not getting those, you know, those emails or whatever. So it all depends on how your business is run. Unfortunately or fortunately, I'm still kind of involved with a lot of that because I don't have that person quite yet. But you know, that's kind of on an individual basis. Maybe, you know, personally, I do take the afternoons off, play golf a lot, but I couldn't have done that in the first 3 years for sure.
Right. Absolutely. So kind of give me the structure of what your business is now, kind of how many painters, what your role is, kind of build that out for us.
So I've kind of gone back and forth between subs and employees, and now we're kind of a hybrid model. So I have an in-house team of 3 painters. I have an awesome operations manager who runs the office. Her name is Tracy. She'll be at the Women in Paint event tomorrow. And then myself. And then I have 2 sub crews that we use kind of seasonally as we get busier. I don't know if we'll ramp up and have another employee team. We typically used to be 2 employee teams, 2 sub crews. I've had a difficult time, maybe with culture, but just with employees. I don't know if it's just me, the way I lead, or I'm not the best at it. I'll be the first to admit I'm probably not the best to work for sometimes, only because I just don't stop to like step back and maybe recognize people or talk with people. I just kind of always put my head down and keep going. So I'm working on changing that, but we're usually 2 and 2. So 2 employee teams, 2 teams of sub crews.
What is the challenging piece? Or do you have to operate your employees differently than your subs? What does that look like? Sometimes people are afraid to bring on subs. I know I was. I made that leap. I was petrified. I didn't know how it was going to work out. And then once I did it, I was like, actually, there's lots of great benefits. Talk to me about your decision to bring on subs and what that's looked like for you.
Well, we just got so busy. We could not get to all these jobs. But then on the flip side of that, we come towards the end of the season and I wouldn't have, if I'd ramp up our employee hiring, I may not have enough work to keep 12, 14 people busy over the winter. So I'd always lose some employees because like, I just didn't have enough work. So the subcontractor piece kind of came as like, as I had less and less employees going into the spring, we needed somebody to help with that early rush, because we had so much, you know, like a seasonal company, you know, this, like, you're selling work. And it kind of just goes up on this shelf because we can't paint it yet. So you just have this backlog of work that you're building, and then you hit spring and you're like, I only have six painters. Like, I only have six painters, we're booked to like June, which sounds great, but it's not, because you're going to miss out on a lot of opportunities because people aren't going to wait 12 weeks, you know, whatever that is. So we would start to bring on subs to kind of help with that initial backlog. And then as I started to see how well they worked, you know, and we've had our share of bad subs, and as everybody does, you know, they get a couple jobs and you realize they are not what you thought, or they're not delivering the quality, or they're pushy, or, you know, they want paid right away, whatever that is. And those kind of weed themselves out. And as you start to kind of find subs that you have a great relationship with. And you work well together, it's fantastic, because like my employees, God love them, they like to work Monday through Friday, you know, exactly 8 hours a day. So that's great. So we schedule the jobs accordingly. It took me a while to get over that because of my mentality of like, it, you know, coming from other company, if the sun's shining, we're working, right? Now it's not like that. So you just have to kind of like work with it. So we work with them on that side. And then the subs are like, give us as much work as you can. We'll work every day but Sunday. So there's that difference. So you have to schedule accordingly with them too. So we'll give them two jobs at a time. So then they can go right from job one to job two without saying, hey, we're done this, you know, can we have our next? So that it helps the transition. So I think the key thing with subs is definitely inspecting their work. You know, you want to take their word for it, but you have to check. And then we started doing this recently where we are part of that closeout. Normally we weren't, and then we started to get some quality issues with a couple subs. So we become part of that closeout, where we're checking the work as well. But yeah, they can be a very instrumental piece, especially if you're looking to scale. In my opinion, you know, I know everybody's different. People have different bandwidth. It's hard to scale, at least initially, with all W-2. It can be done. There's painters in our market that do it. I struggle with it. So having subs is a really strategic piece of like, plug them in when you're busy, and then explain to them, like, we'll do our best to keep you busy as long as we can, but we may not be able to keep you busy year round. And most of them are okay with that, and they're good with that. Ways to stay busy. I found the earlier you're honest with them, the better they are about it, because they have time to figure out, okay, what's my next step. If you wait until like, oh, by the way, this is your last job, I don't have anything for you, like, that kind of throws them for a loop, upsets them. So you kind of just communicate openly with them, just as if you'd want them to communicate with you. They're like, hey, next week I have a job of my own. Awesome. And then we won't set your next job up until, tell me when you're going to be done. Right. So there's that two-way street of communication that makes a sub relationship successful.
Two things you said that I love. The one thing you do is that when you give a subcontractor a job, you give them two at a time. So I like that, because now they know what's coming on the schedule, right? Yep, and then the other thing you said, we've battled with this. It's telling them ahead of time if you don't have work coming. And I don't know why for us, we always felt like this hesitation. It's because like we felt bad, like we're trying to hang on to the last moment. So hopefully we can say, oh, we've got something for you. But we used to kind of delay on some of that communication because we felt bad actually saying, I'm sorry, I don't have another job for you right now. And we have done exactly what you said, which is, you know what, the kind thing to do is to tell them right away, hey guys, I don't know if in 2 weeks I'm going to have work for you. I'm putting it out there right now. So that's, I love that you said that, because I think that's an important piece of the relationship.
Yeah. And a lot of them have a lot of connections to where if you don't have work, they can make phone calls to 4, 5, 6 people, and they can find something
that's right
to do. So you're better off letting them know so they can plan ahead.
That's right. So you've got the employee sub model, you're moving and grooving. Talk to me about what your hope is for this business. Okay. What do you hope is going to happen with Sun Lighthouse Painting?
Ultimately, if I could write my own script, my son Chase is a freshman in college right now, majoring in business. He's probably going to go into finance. We don't know yet. I'd love to have him as part of it somehow this off season, or his over his holiday break. He applied to a couple of retail jobs, didn't get hired. So he kind of worked for me as almost like a backup plan.
Yeah.
To me personally, it was awesome. Like it, I could not have, and he would like, you know, he doesn't like when I get sentimental, you know, he's like, what, why are you taking a picture? Why are you taking a picture of me? You know, it's like, it's just so cool to see your son, you know, in your gear,
yeah,
working alongside you is like, so even if he's not in the field, right? If he comes in, whatever, that's my ultimate goal. I don't know if it'll happen, and he has to want. And I talked to two or three family business guys to the PCA, and that was the one thing I took away from it. Like, they're like, you know, your son has to want to be in it, because if he doesn't, and you're just kind of like, it's your dream, it's never going to be his dream. So that's my ideal goal. I'd like to get to one point, you know, between 1.5 to 2, maybe hit, you know, I know the Death Valley is between 1.5 and 3. I don't see myself getting massively big and scaling this thing to like, you know, 10x, but yeah. I'd like to at least cross 1.5. So I have a little bit of breathing room if I did have to bring somebody else on, you know, with a decent salary.
Totally.
Because, you know, I would have to have some extra capital to be able to pay a non-revenue position. Not that they don't make money for the company, but they're not directly generating revenue.
Yeah. First, when you talk about Chase being part of the business, it's so touching to me. And I love it. And I love that you, you're sentimental about it and you share that. It's something I just love about you. Last topic I want to talk about, and then we're going to talk about Goop.
Okay.
Let's talk about cash flow real quick. One of the biggest struggles in business, for me, and I know many others, is cash flow.
Yep.
What can you say about cash flow, balancing it out? You know, money can be one of the biggest stressors. I know it's been the biggest for me. It's what causes this hair to be gray and we have to go get it colored and all of that.
Look.
Yeah, but see, you're rocking the gray. You're rocking it. What suggestions, information can you put out there on managing cash flow? What would you say about it?
So two things. Take deposits and use a credit card, but use a credit card wisely. So when I started my business, I was like, I'm not using a credit card. I'm going to bootstrap this thing, you know, because I don't want to spend more and then have this giant credit card bill then I can't pay it. But what happens is, you know, you're paying your paint bill on time. You're like, you're patting yourself on the back. Oh, all of a sudden your operating money can get very, very low. And you're like, oh my gosh. You know, okay, I have a deposit, but so I need this next two clients to pay us the minute we're finished so I can make payroll. Like that feeling is the wave of anxiety that comes over you when you look at your bank account and you know what you have to make on payroll and it's either not there or it's very close to being exact is like, I can't even describe it.
It's one of the worst feelings ever.
It is. It's like it's almost like a euphoric feeling, but a bad one, right?
In a bad way.
So using credit card helps and especially now that like 2% cash back is helps. That's huge. But so you use your credit card and you put as much of everything that you can on, especially your paint, right? Because that gives you an additional 30 days to pay your paint bill if you have a slow pay customer or whatever. And then taking deposits, again, you want to make sure you're not spending those deposits on frivolous things, but they can definitely help cover expenses until you get paid, you know, especially when you're coming out of the winter. So if I'm selling exterior jobs, if we sell any, so our thing is, you know, leading up into the end of the year, if we sell an exterior for the following spring, we take $100 deposit just to lock them in and not make them feel like I'm giving this person 25% down. It's November and they're not going to paint my house until May. So there's that little bit of like, hey, we're not going to hold on to your money. We want to just take this $100 deposit. But once we get into season, we're in the same calendar year, we take that full deposit. And those deposits help just kind of keep your bank account at a safe, maintainable level where you have money to run and you're not like so close to, you know, because what if you hit that spot where you have no money, it's almost like a complete roadblock. Like you cannot move forward. And then you have to go to a client and ask for a draw or ask for, you know, partial payment. You can also take on bigger jobs if you have good cash flow, because you can kind of bankroll that payroll
Yes.
The paint, you know, you can, and you can always, we had a really big job go south, and which is why I don't do a lot of new construction anymore. And I went to the, it was a PPG job, and I went to them and I said, I can't pay my paint bill. I can pay you some of it and we can work out a payment plan. But I can't pay, I know what I owe you. I can't pay it all. So that helped too. So, you know, if you ever get in that situation,
that's right.
I don't, you know, all the paint providers can mute this right now, but pay your paint bill last.
Yeah. So first. It's true. So let me build that out a little bit. So to help with cash flow, take deposits. I fully agree with you. You take a 25% deposit.
Yes.
Okay. We do a 35%. Now I also want to say that I know in some worlds you can't do that commercial. You're not really getting deposits. We are residential folks here. So take deposits, and then I'm with you on the credit card thing. And this is something I had to learn because I grew up in a household that said, no, don't use credit cards. Credit cards are evil. Same. It'll ruin your credit. And while that can be true, there's a flip side of that credit cards can be used as a tool. They can actually help build your credit quickly. You get a good rewards card. You can get cash back. There's so many things you can do with rewards. And the idea is that you put all of your expenses on a really good rewards credit card, and it gives you a little more time to pay it off. And it also keeps the cash in the bank. Right. Correct. And I'm with you. Those are two great, great suggestions.
Yeah. If you have a slow month, it's not advised, but you can pay a portion of what you owe. And then when the rest of the money comes in, then you can pay it off. Obviously you want to try to pay it off, but if you can't, you know, it's better to keep the cash in the bank.
Yes. And then the other thing you alluded to, and I think this is so important because this has been so instrumental for me, is developing a good relationship with your rep, because you can go to them and say, I don't have the money to pay my bill this month. Is there anything you can do? Can you work with me? I mean, I've had the folks from Sherwin-Williams, their credit department, you know, I have gotten, you know, a couple of years ago, got into some trouble where I just could not pay the bill because I had to make the decision. Do I pay my people or do I pay my Sherwin-Williams bill? And I had to choose paying my team. And so Sherwin came up with the most creative way for me to pay this bill down, to pay on my account. And I would have never, if I wouldn't have gone to them and said, hey, I need help, I would have never been able to get this this option that they gave me that really helped propel the business forward. And
well, the key too is if you pay on the bill, they'll let you make payments and keep your charge account open.
That's right. That's right.
That's key, because if your charge account's closed, you have to pay as you go, which
that's right. And then you're draining all your cash or you're tying up your funds in your credit card. But I just want to say that, like, going to a rep and building that relationship where you feel like you can say, I mean, listen, I don't want to say this. This is the vulnerability piece, but hey, I cannot pay this bill. Can you help me? They will help you. And they appreciate more than you would even believe that you're coming to them with a plan. So great advice, Aaron. Let's talk about Goop real quick. One thing that you've done in the Ohio area, you have created a group where the Ohio painters can get together and learn and all the things. Talk about why you created Goop and some of the things that we've got coming up this year in the group.
So I saw the success of the Gathering of Minnesota Painters, and I wanted to emulate that and bring it to Ohio. So I had talked to Sherwin's a little bit about it, and then COVID hit. So they were on board, and then, of course, you know what happened. And then Robbie Johnson, who's out of Dayton, reached out to me and was saying, hey, what do you think about, you know, getting this group together? So I'm like, I'm 100% in. Because, you know, he had seen me on some other pages in my involvement. We had met at some show somewhere, but I can't remember where. And so we got myself and we got Robbie and then Eric Stalter out of Cleveland. We're kind of like the three-headed leadership team for the Gathering of Ohio Painters. So we got together and had an event. At the time, we got PPG to actually sponsor our first event. They were very instrumental in getting it off the ground. They paid for a great space for us to meet at Dave and Buster's. They provided this awesome food, like a buffet style thing. And we kind of talked a little. I think we had Wooster come and present. And then I don't know if you presented the first time or not. You presented. And then we had a couple other meetings. And then Robbie had been in communication with PCA. We wanted to get Nick Slavic to come into Columbus as well. So we partnered with PCA and Sherwin-Williams to have a master's class at our December meeting. And that kind of really helped kick us off. You know, we had some meetings in between our first meeting and that meeting, but that kind of gave us a little bit of like that fuel, jet fuel to take for the group to take off and get some people involved and interested. The thing about it that's great is, especially in Columbus, I feel like in our Columbus representatives of the group, are we competitors? Sure. But there's a lot of collaboration to where it's like, hey, like you did your whole sales presentation, like from first phone call to, you know, signed estimate, like, what does that look like? And that was eye-opening for me, but I think a lot of people that were there were like, wow, this is great, right? And I don't know if that would have happened if we didn't have this group.
Right.
I couldn't, when I started my painting company, I couldn't imagine if someone's like, hey, would you show us how you do? I'm like, that's a secret.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't show that, you know, but now that we see it's amazing. So, and then in 2022, I slacked a little bit. I think we did. And we didn't do the greatest job of like getting meetings lined up and ahead of time. That was, I think, the year you might've presented that year. So we kind of like dropped the ball there. So I knew like, okay, 2023, I'm going to be on it and I'm going to plan this out way in advance. So we got all of our meetings set up in advance. I asked all three providers, Sherwin, PPG, and Benjamin Moore, this is what we want to do. How can you help us? So we did Q1, I think was a Sherwin, maybe PPG, I can't remember. And then Q2 was the other. Q1 was Sherwin-Williams. They put together a nice lunch for us. And then we copied the brain melds that you do at PCA. And we had four tables with different topics. And then we rotate every 15 minutes. And that worked out really good. And then Q2, we actually just met regionally. So we did like Columbus people. We went to Topgolf. Dayton had their own. Cleveland had their own. And then Q3, I had reached out to Timberlane Finishes way back at the beginning of the year. Hey, we'd like to do an event at your shop to show people all these amazing products you have, what you can do to help the cabinet painting industry if someone's interested or like hasn't started to really get to those 2K finishes. And they just knocked it out of the park. They had a food truck and they had name badges for everybody. And they had a representative from Surf Prep and Apollo and Graco, Tri-Tech, like... And we rotated through stations with each vendor. And then we had an awesome lunch and it was great. And then Q4, we were at Creative Paints and Benjamin Moore underwrote that one. And we talked about Christmas lights. You know, how can you generate some revenue doing Christmas lights? So the one thing I learned is if you start in January and you start asking everybody now, that really helps. So like this year for Q1, we got to tour Worcester Brush Company. That was eye-opening to see how they make all that stuff, the process, how big their factory and their assembly, you know, their plant is, how many people actually work there. They do everything in-house, even printing the brush jackets. Like, it's pretty cool. So we got to do that. And then Q2, we have Torlando coming in April 4th to talk about his sprint, you know, get the work, do the work. So we'll do a whole day session with him. I actually went down to a Cincinnati area meeting. Torlando spoke there. So I'm like, oh, he would be great in Columbus. So, nice. And Sherwin-Williams is on board with that. So they're underwriting the whole thing. So it helps to use your, paint providers, reach out to them, see what they'll do. If you don't have a gathering group, start it with three people and just grow it from there. You don't have to have lunch. You don't have to do like these big events where you're taking pictures of everybody and like, look at us. Be jealous. Like you can just do very basic and start from there. But we've been fortunate because we've had a lot of great participation in Ohio.
Yeah. And the idea is that we can do more together, even though we might be competitors in some sense, we can actually help each other and advance each other's businesses. I love it. All right, Aaron, that is almost a wrap. I got one last question that I ask everybody. And what I want to know is, what do you do to take care of yourself so that you can continue to show up for your business, for your family, for Chase? What do you do to take care of yourself so that you can be the best version?
I play a lot of golf. it's like my fishing. I don't like fishing because I don't have the patience, but it's just like when you get out in nature, especially like an early morning round, it's like just you and the birds in the dew, and you're just, it's just peaceful. And, yeah. And I do get frustrated. You know, bad shots do piss me off, but it's there's nothing like it. So that's kind of my self-care. Not big into massages, although I do like them. I've done a couple facials. Those are nice, but I'm more of a, you know, give me some golf, give me a few white claws, you know, and just let me have fun.
Yeah, I love it. All right. Hey, thanks for joining me. We've wrapped up another show of Women in Paint, and we will see y'all next time.
PaintEd podcasts are produced by the Painting Contractors Association and are made possible by members and industry partners. To find out more about upcoming education opportunities or for more information about joining PCA, visit pcapainted.org.